It's Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, and welcome to episode 157 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And this month is Connected Educator Month.
Yay!
So today, that was a thank you.
I know, it was. It
was a little more enthusiastic. Right. I will edit it.
Go teachers!
So this month we'll talk a little bit about EdChats in particular. I've recently participated in a couple of them, and I have a lot of resources, so be sure to check out the show notes this time. And Mike, what do you have for Security Spotlight this time?
Talk a little bit about the major Adobe hack that happened. To showcase our National Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Also National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So a lot of different things being celebrated this time. So we'll do that, and we'll talk about our technology picks of the week.
We will. I'm going to talk a little bit about some alternatives for sites that have been affected by the federal government shutdown.
Okay. Well, you want to make sure we pay attention to that one. So here we go. Connected Educator Month, and this time I thought we would talk a little bit about EdChats and what it means to be a connected educator. And there are many different ways in today's world that you can participate and build out your network. But this week in particular, I've participated in a couple of EdChats, and particularly I'm involved with Twitter. So on Twitter, we have these things called EdChats, and it's just kind of blossomed over the years. I think the first one I participated was back in, 2009. And what it is somebody will choose a moderator role and agree to, a time. So, say, Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. or 7 to 8 p.m., whatever it is. It's usually about an hour. Mm-hmm. And you can either do it synchronously, everybody participate during that one-hour time. But the nice thing about Twitter is, if you can't make it during that time, you can participate, a little bit later, go back and at least review, what everybody's been talking about before. So the one I want to start out with is one of the first ones I participated back in 2009, and it was called EdChat, using the hashtag, the number symbol, EdChat. It began by Tom Whitby, and I'll provide a link in the show notes out there. And it's just kind of grown. I mean, it's still very, very active today. And it's an online community that you can go out and participate. And what you generally do in a tweet, at the end of your tweet, you will put the hashtag symbol for whatever chat it was. The other one I participated in this week was Illinois EdChat. So these have kind of expanded out there to the different states. So there's one for Iowa, California's CA EdChat, Iowa's IA EdChat.
So do they range from people participating from just a handful to a huge number?
Yes.
Because the thing that I hesitate with those is almost like, how we have people talking over each other in meetings, mm-hmm. that the tweets are coming so fast and furious that while I'm writing mine, I'm missing four other people saying the same exact thing.
Right.
And so I guess it's one of those where you start with a small one and get comfortable with it and then maybe see.
Yeah. And kind of a theme, since it is Connected Educator Month, that I've been finding this year, we've been having some conversations about there what it means to be a connected educator, uh-huh. but how many people, Twitter, once you're involved in a professional learning community, a PLN, you just kind of assume that everybody else is. But there's a large number of teachers that, you don't have to use Twitter. A lot of EdChats start on LinkedIn or some of the other professional networks, and Facebook has some things as well. But, we kind of get in this little world and echo chamber that we hear, in our virtual worlds. So that's something to keep in mind. But one nice thing about Twitter and the importance of the hashtag is that hashtag acts as a filter. So you can either do a search in Twitter on, that hashtag ILEDCHAT, Illinois EdChat. And then what that will do is bring up all the participants in that. So, it's a running archive of that conversation out there.
So you're just specifically in that one and you don't have
Or you can use another app like TweetDeck or Hootsuite or some of the other apps that actually add a column that's nothing, that you see nothing but anything with that hashtag in it. Which is the way I typically do it, because I use TweetDeck.
Yeah.
So you can filter by
kind of organize it a little bit for you, so you're not in three conversations at the same time.
Right. And if you're new to this, the other nice thing is, you know, you don't have to participate, although kind of the purpose is participating in it, but you can really just kind of sit back and lurk a little bit and see, you know, until you're comfortable, because, you know, this is an online presence. It's public. Everybody sees, you know, your tweets that are out there publicly. And as I said, it acts as a running archive. So kind of the other things that, you know, we teach our students about being good netizens out there and minding your manners in cyberspace, mm-hmm. and, you know, not being a troll. And we have moderators out there that kind of keep the subject on track. And kind of what's happened a lot recently is usually the format most recently is a moderator will come up with like five questions. And, you know, they'll say, you know, Illinois Ed Chat starts at, I believe it's 9 p.m. on Monday nights. I'll double check. But you go out there, 9 p.m., the moderator will come up and they'll put Q1 and send out a question for question one, ask the question, and then put hashtag ILEDCHAT at the very end of it. Mm-hmm. So if you do have TweetDeck or something filtering on those, you'll see everybody's responses. And then everybody can reply to that question and just kind of have an online virtual conversation going on. So it's worked out really, really well over the years. And again, because you only have 140 characters, keeps things nice, short, and sweet. And you go on to the next one. And they generally last about an hour. And it's pretty rapid fire. And if you're a beginning Twitter user, it's very, very easy to get overwhelmed. And if you're thinking about starting one, if you have a special interest group or something, it seems to work. You need that critical mass to begin with. So, you know, I'd say about a dozen people just to get started, so you keep the conversation rolling. But it's not unusual to have, you know, hundreds of people. And if it becomes that popular, then it really does become a challenge to keep up with that, because you're responding to question one, and meanwhile, you know, they've gone on to question three and you're answering question one.
Right.
So kind of the format is you'll put an A1, you'll reply back to the tweet and you'll say A1 for answer one, and then you'll put your description for what you want for your answer, and then again make sure at the very end of it put the hashtag for whatever chat it is. So there literally are hundreds of different chats. And again, I'll put a link out in the show notes. There is a gentleman on Twitter, Cyberry Man, and I'll put a link out there. But he has links to all the different Ed Chats. Like I said, the different states, you know, whatever state you most likely will have one out there. Alabama's another one I see out there quite a bit. And then another one that I for sure tell our pre-service teacher, there's one called NT Chat. And that stands for new teacher.
Oh, that's cool.
So there's someone that moderates that, and you can go out there and participate on those.
Now, are there occasionally things that go in between the scheduled chats, too? Like, say you thought of something that would be mm-hmm. appropriate for that group. Can you just post it on Wednesday afternoon, even though you know?
Yep, you can. Your audience is going to be limited because you have that 1 hour of concentrated time where everybody's really paying attention. The other big one out there, you know, in my world is EdTech. You'll see a lot of people, you know, hashtag EdTech or something. And we're talking about educational technology issues and things like that. But, you know, the hashtag's kind of taken on a life of its own. And it's not just education. There's one out there I caught yesterday. Site World is having a chat this Friday, October 18th at 1 p.m. And they focus on new mobile platforms. So they'll be talking about iOS 7, Windows 8.1, and, you know, the other Android mm-hmm. choices. But that's kind of a BYOD chat, you know, wearing your own device. So they're popping up all over the place.
Right. Well, even I usually watch the Today Show in the mornings, and they call it their Orange Room. And they encourage during the broadcast that you tweet and hashtag, and then they read the tweets and discuss them.
Because they'll have producers out there scanning for
this. And that's a whole section of the show now. I mean, it's an actual segment and portion of what they do, and they have, I believe, Carson Daly is usually the host of that.
And I notice on network TV, you know, you'll see the hashtags.
Right. And that. So, I mean, it really is just becoming embedded in everything we do.
Go to, like, pro football games and on the they'll have moderators, but you can tweet to the stadium and they'll display it. Like, if you're at Soldier Field, you can, like, tweet, like, Go Bears, hashtag, right. Chicago Bears.
Again, moderated with some intervention because,
you know,
everything could be abused, certainly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean they've become very, very popular out there. And as I said, in the Twitter world, I primarily concentrate my efforts there. And you know, developing your PLN, your personal learning network, mm-hmm. or your professional learning network. And just as a tip, if you are a new Twitter user and you're using it for educational purposes, it's a great way to go out and pick up new followers and go out and follow additional people, because obviously if they're in that chat, right. you have some common interest. And, you know, it's real good to do that as well.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, my Twitter account got hacked 2 days in a row.
Oh, dear.
I changed the password, and the next day it was hacked again.
Oh, no.
And so I wasn't not sure what happened there, but my son sent me a text and said, shut down your Twitter. You're sending emails to private messages.
DM, yeah, direct message.
Yep. And so I sent out an apology and closed it down or changed it that day. Next day, the same thing happened. I got an email from Twitter saying, we believe your account's been compromised. So I just let it alone for about 3 days and then redid it. And then now it's fine.
Yeah, that's another thing, you know, that, again, if you're new to Twitter in this virtual world, you know, good guys and bad guys, again, just like in the real world. But once a chat becomes popular, it's called trending on Twitter. You know, once it starts trending, then the spammers come out. So then they'll start going out and spamming that list with, you know, that hashtag or whatever, and try getting people to go out there and change that.
Did your ADD kick in when that bell rang, Tom?
Yes, it did. Now, last time you were sending me email messages
during the show. It was not me this time. I promise, it wasn't me.
You're sitting there. I was trying to figure out what's going on. It's like you're sending me show notes during the show.
That's not like the finger across the throat signal for you to stop or anything like that. Yeah. I swear.
Yeah. So anyway, the Twitter chats are out there. And I said the big one out there, be sure, for sure, I'll provide a link out there to the Cyberry Man's educational websites and hashtag links. And let me just show you this. We've got my monitor up here. But my educational hashtag page, look at this.
Wow.
I don't know. Probably over 1,000 there, I'm guessing. There's a lot. And, you know, he's kind of categorizing different things out there. But a lot of different things.
And it's funny because I see things and it's like, you know, people are just making up hashtags, whatever they want all the time. Because some of them are just hilarious what people create.
I find that with our Twitter account and security is like, okay, what hashtags do I want to do to get this word out? Do I want to use phishing, InfoSec? Right. Like today I added cybersecurity because I started seeing that one showing up more and deciding which one is the best way to get to the right people.
Yep. So happy Connected Educators Month out there. Make those connections. Make them productive. You know, do good things out there. And be sure to check out the show notes because I do have several links to the different chats. And like I said, whatever your subject area, there'll be something out there for you.
Very good. Thanks.
Up next is our Security Spotlight. And this month, I received an email from Adobe saying that they had their systems compromised, and I was just wondering if it was important for me to change my password, Mike.
A bit, and probably more than a bit. Adobe had a major compromise earlier this month, you know, to kick off National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. They have lost or had compromised 2.9 million customer accounts.
Wow.
to include their IDs, passwords, although they were encrypted, it doesn't mean eventually they'll get hacked and compromised. Names, credit card and debit card information, which was also encrypted. And then they also got some of the source code for the Adobe products, which is, on the security side of the house, is more
concerning
than what a normal user would see, because they can start launching some exploits that Adobe doesn't even know are there.
Amateurs that did this.
No, this. I mean, who knows what hackers, if they're amateurs or not. But it's probably a good idea to change. Definitely change your password. They, you know, the passwords were encrypted, but there's still ways around that encryption, especially if they have the hash, what they call the hashes to them.
Yeah. Now, you know, Adobe is kind of known for their high-end creative suite
programs. Right. So a lot of these are your very creative professionals, and you know, it's very expensive software out there. But in the last year or two, they've moved to what they call their Adobe Creative Cloud, where they're moving to that subscription model. So I think they probably got a lot more credit card information and things, you know, because it's a monthly billing.
Right. Right. And also, like I said, and they don't believe that with its credit and debit cards that they really had anything. Those numbers and stuff were encrypted, but they doesn't mean they still can't eventually figure out the encryption and get through it. So it was a pretty big breach. I know other people on campus have been getting them and actually questioning if they're phishing emails, which is good. That's good that they're questioning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are actually legitimate emails. So they got a lot of information. And on top of all the account information that they got, like I said, they got source code somewhere around the 40 gigs range of data. So it was a pretty big, big compromise.
And, you know, Adobe's just so prolific. Adobe Reader, you know, everybody has
everybody
that for their
on everything.
And
I mean,
there's a lot of exploits through Adobe Reader to begin with. So.
Because, I mean, every device I've ever used has had Adobe Reader. It's definitely one that crosses all platforms. And
right, yeah, you see it, you know, any piece of software is like, make sure you have Adobe Reader, you know, it's, or something, you know, installed on your computer to use the system. So it's a, it's a pretty big deal when Adobe runs into this.
Yeah. Technology pick of the week this week is the Smart Notebook version 11.3 program, and I've recently done a series of podcasts for our pre-service teachers. We've got a lot of pre-service teachers going out to practicum and in the field, and in this particular area there are a lot of smart boards still in the classroom. So we put together a few screencasts, and you can go visit the ITC website, just eiu.edu/ITC. Click on our YouTube link and that will take you out there. Right now, I think I've got five different screencasts, and I'm still building this out, so I'll probably have at least a couple more to add here. But they're just, you know, out on YouTube, just a nice little way to get familiar with some of the new things out there. I start off with the very basics with the toolkit, and then go through Gallery Essentials. And then also, you know, we're just speaking of Adobe, they're not having a real good month, because last week we were trying to do the right thing and go out and update, and Adobe sent out a Flash update, and unfortunately it broke some of the Flash components in the Lesson Activity Toolkit. So if you are out in your schools and suddenly start having, you know, some of your interactive Flash content not work, there is a workaround, and you can do this. In fact, I'll just put a link out in the show notes to take you to the Smart Notebook, and they show you how to uninstall that update and then roll it back so you can get things working again. But it caught a lot of us off guard. Nothing appeared, you know, everything appeared to work during the update, but whenever you went in and used some of those interactive components, particularly in the Lesson Activity Toolkit, you would see it would just come up with a broken link, and you'd see like a symbol NAN, which is total nonsense. Uh-huh. Just a quick little search out on the internet, and you know, anybody that did that update is going to have this issue. So there's a lot of tech people out there rolling back some of those updates.
Undoing what they did and then redoing.
Unupdating. So, but, you know, those screencasts are available out there. Like I said, I've got a couple more I would like to do, and I'm trying to make like a little playlist of videos that start you from the very basics, and it'll at least take you to an intermediate level by the time you get done here. So that's worked out really well. I'm using that for some flipped PD. You know, we're talking about the Ed Chats earlier. Being able to watch a screencast. In fact, I just did this with probably 60 or 70 pre-service students. I had them watch, or actually their instructors had them watch these videos, and then I spent an hour with them answering any questions. So it was an advantage of flipping that professional development. You know, they could watch the videos on their own time, and then we could come in and do a question and answer session and actually get to the meat of the, you know, how do I design a lesson plan and incorporate the Smart Notebook and give them the opportunity. It's like, okay, why didn't I explain very well, or whatever other questions that they may have. And that's really good for me. Because now I need to go out and do like a tips and tricks
smart board lesson on some of those questions I got from the students.
How long are the videos?
I try keeping them under 10 minutes. I think there's one that's like 14 minutes. But I broke the toolbar because there's a lot of new things. It's an adaptive toolbar in version 11.3, and I broke it into three parts. So I try like chunking those into about 10 minutes segments. In that case, I really needed a series of three to cover that topic thoroughly. So that's my pick.
Very cool. Well, I was going to go one direction, and I completely changed. So you guys don't even know what I'm going to talk about now. But at the beginning of the month, with being teaching with primary sources, and that we use the Library of Congress website constantly, and with the federal shutdown, the site was down. Mm-hmm. And that for 4 days, they had it shut down completely, and there was a message saying you couldn't use it. And they came back up, and then I talked to a couple of students and teachers who have used other sites that are still down and you can't access them. And so one of the things one of my colleagues was talking about that was a great idea is a site called archive.org.
Oh, yeah.
Where I just love that site. It has the coolest media, old media, just fun stuff on it that you can check out. And really unique things that you can find that it pulls from collections all over. But from the Wayback Machine, mm-hmm. you can find archived copies of websites. Mm-hmm. And so some of the teachers that needed resources from Library of Congress and different websites were going to archive.org and the Wayback Machine and finding archived versions of the site to at least do screenshots or pull out resources mm-hmm. and save them to their computer. So, sometimes we're so used to, even though what the Library of Congress did was putting things in digital format that you can save it to your own computer or your own, mm-hmm. Files. And that is awesome. We still get overconfident in that and sometimes think, well, I don't need to save it on mine. I can just get it.
It'll always be here.
Right. It's always going to be accessible. And that, and so, it's a good little reminder in that respect that we do need to keep those really important things mm-hmm. locally if we can. And, we've talked about that with cloud as well, we keep things. And
it's great when it's working.
Exactly.
Not so much when it's not.
And that, but, It's nice that there are all of these alternatives. And if nothing else, just to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, this archive.org and the Wayback Machine are so cool.
Also, a very good lesson for your students to say, what's on the internet can stay on the internet. Even though you delete it, because I can go back to websites I did 10, 15 years ago when we were first starting out.
Right.
And seen some of that. And it's kind of a neat little history lesson, too, looking how primitive some of that
is. And you thought you were so cutting edge at the time, right?
Yeah. Archive.org, great site. I kind of think of it as a nonprofit type thing. They're archiving the internet out there to save. And that, again, for somebody teaching with primary sources, sometimes these links are so fleeting. We'll have a website up and then it's gone the next day. Mm-hmm. Where do we have that permanence? And that's what archive.org is attempting to do.
And there were, we were looking for some, a faculty member and I were doing some research on Helen Keller, and I found these scrapbooks of newspaper articles for decades that were kept either by her or someone in her family. Now, of course, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And that in an awesome PDF format that mm-hmm. I could blow up print and all of that. Now, as far as copyright, you're really going to have to look at everything individually because it draws from so many different collections that you're going to have to really check and see before you let your students loose in that. Make sure that they consider that before they use anything from the site. But everything is in EPUB, PDF, all these different
Real
formats.
Media, all the other old ones.
There's just this huge list mm-hmm. of formats that are available that you can get everything to, because I also downloaded a book. We're starting a project on a local historical, this Cynthia Ann Parker, who in Texas was kidnapped by the Comanches and raised by the Comanches mm-hmm. and was actually the basis for The Searchers, the John Wayne movie. And she was born in Coles County.
Wow.
And so I was doing and found some books written in the late 1800s mm-hmm. on this site that reference Coles County and mm-hmm. and all of that. So it's fun to play.
Yeah.
It's better than Angry Birds.
Yeah. Okay, Mike.
Okay, and I'm going to
go in a completely different direction, but more, mine's more on safety. In a few episodes back, I talked about one of my tech picks was the Nest programmable thermostat.
Yes.
In home automation. Well, that company, Nest, has just announced a release of December, a new system called the Nest Protect. And this system is a smoke detector and carbon monoxide detector it takes away of all the hassles we have with our smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, because they say 70% of home fires, the smoke detectors, either the batteries are out or they weren't working, because we get annoyed with, you know,
beep.
Yep.
Beep.
The late night, the battery's dying, beep. Yep. You can't figure out which smoke detector it is, and you're standing around.
Walking around the house.
And, I mean, the other, like a month ago, I spent a half hour trying to figure out where the smoke detector was and where it was beeping. And then that was the last one that had batteries in my house. And I have 6 smoke detectors, and now none of them have batteries because it's just a hassle.
And was your dog freaking? Because our dogs freak out.
No, the dog was fine with it, but it was still just trying to find it. But this device has just some great features. It tells you, and it gives you like a actual voice warning when a smoke level rises. It'll tell you that there's an increased smoke in the kitchen.
So that won't freak you out in the middle of the night when you...
Well, and that's the point. It's supposed to like alert you when something is, when there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. But this has also like a sense of like danger, but then it has an emergency level. So like if you're cooking like popcorn, you burn popcorn in your microwave or something, you know, you get annoyed because it smokes, the smoke detector goes off, you got to sit there and wave a paper, get on a ladder. This will tell you that there's an increased smoke. You know, this is a warning. And if you walk up and you wave your hand in front of it, it will disable it. Mm-hmm. So it won't go off.
Does it take you to the next step and alert the fire department?
No, but it will send it's because just like the programmable thermostat, it has an app. It syncs up into the Nest app system, and it'll send you emails and text notifications when there's a red level event, like an emergency, like if you're away from home and there's a fire and the smoke detectors.
So when you have someone in the house who's not able physically to...
Right. Because I have a coworker that's the way that they have someone that's in a house that isn't physically able to get out, but they're home alone. Yeah. This way they get alerted so that they can contact a neighbor or something to get
the
individual out. So it's really good. It's going to have some other... It's going to sync up with the thermostat also if carbon monoxide is detected and it's an alarm emergency level, and the Nest thermostat and your furnace is on, it'll cut it off so that the gas stops flowing. So that it will let you know that that's happening too. And it's great because it also has battery and wired features. So like if you have your smoke detector's hardwire, you know, you can do that, or if it has a battery. And then instead of it chirping at you when the batteries are low, it sends you a notification in like an email or through the program that your batteries are low, as opposed to, you know, the cry wolf scenario where like, oh, it beeps and it's going to take the batteries out. I'll replace it the next day because it's 1 a.m. in the morning. Oh, I don't have any 9 volts. Oh, I gotta go buy. Well, I'll get it later.
Yeah.
I'm doing your groceries, but you never actually end up getting it. So,
yep.
So it's actually, I think, a good product. And a good look at something that is an issue that we just kind of deal with, and it solves a lot of problems we have with it.
Very cool.
Thank you. That wraps it up for episode 157 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on our Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.